From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Patty White with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, July 23rd, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Attorneys representing victims of the Lewiston shooting say investigations by the U.S. Army Reserves and the Army Inspector General paint a clear picture of numerous errors and repeated warning signs that were ignored or overlooked by gunman Robert Card's command. The Army's report, released today, reveals that three of Card's superiors were disciplined for dereliction of duty by failing to address Card's declining mental health. But attorney Travis Brennan says the report also raises important questions after Card requested to be discharged from a New York psychiatric hospital on August 2nd.
The hospital initially moved to have him involuntarily committed. Mr. Card withdrew that request, and then the hospital canceled the court proceeding, and he was then discharged on August 3rd.
After that, Brennan says Army Reserve leaders failed to follow up with Card, even as his erratic behavior continued, and even though they knew he was heavily armed and his best friend had warned them that he might commit a mass shooting. Maine's delegates to the Democratic National Convention voted Monday to support Vice President Kamala Harris following President Biden's withdrawal from the race. The delegates had been bound to Biden because he won the state's Democratic presidential primary in March, but they were released from that obligation and were free to support other candidates after Biden stepped aside on Sunday. According to the Maine Democratic Party, all of the delegates who participated in a meeting Monday night pledged to support Harris ahead of the convention in Chicago next month. Maine is sending 32 delegates to the convention. Harris appeared to have essentially locked up the nomination by Monday evening by securing commitments from the nearly 2,000 delegates that will be needed during the first round of voting. Under a rule approved Tuesday by the Maine Public Utilities Commission, the state will give preference to energy projects sited on agricultural land tainted by PFAS, a family of industrial chemicals used in a wide range of products. As Peter McGuire reports, advocates of the measure say clean power projects, such as solar arrays, could offer a financial lifeline to dozens of contaminated farms.
More than 50 Maine farms have been identified with toxic amounts of PFAS in soil and water. The chemicals have been linked to human health problems, including cancer and kidney malfunction. Under the rule, Maine would procure nearly 600,000 megawatts of renewable power from projects potentially sited on land that cannot be used for agriculture because of contamination. Eliza Donahue, director of the Maine Renewable Energy Association, says partnering with clean energy developers could be a new source of earnings for affected farmers.
And the possibility of locating solar on those lands allows for a revenue stream that hopefully is going to allow these farmers, these landowners, to keep their other lands in active agricultural production.
The PUC was directed to enact the rule by a state law passed last year. The amount of power to be procured through the measure equals 5% of retail electricity sales in 2021. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Peter McGuire.
Meanwhile, the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association is suing the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for allegedly failing to regulate the spread of sludge contaminated with PFAS. Caitlin Bedayan has more.
MOFCA argues that the EPA failed to regulate the spread of sludge under the Clean Water Act, which directs the agency to identify pollutants in biosolids every 2 years. The association is joining a lawsuit filed last month by ranchers in Johnson County, Texas, whose water and land were contaminated with PFAS after sludge was spread nearby. It's a similar situation in Maine, where much of the PFAS contamination has been linked to the spread of sludge. MOFCA provides technical assistance to farms affected by the contamination and has awarded more than $1.5 million in emergency relief funds to more than 50 farm families. In a statement, Executive Director Sarah Alexander says the EPA should, quote, stop PFAS from ending up on farm fields and on our plates. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedayan.
The federal government has simplified health regulations for dogs crossing the border with the United States. Starting August 1st, owners of dogs that have been in countries deemed low risk for canine rabies during the previous 6 months must complete a form from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to cross the border, but will no longer need to have the form signed by two veterinarians.
So that leaves a big hurdle right there.
Sarah Brooks with Can-Am Crown International Sled Dog Race says the changes should make it easier for Canadian mushers to participate in future competitions.
I have heard from Canadian mushers that, you know, they're very excited about the progress. You know, there's still quite a bit of expense that's involved.
But Brooks says she still believes that the new rules are unnecessary and that their implementation should at least be postponed. The regulations still require that all dogs have a microchip and be at least 6 months or older to cross the border. The Maine Child Welfare Action Network and the State Department of Health and Human Services have launched a new campaign to support parents and caregivers. A new website called Be There For Me connects parents to resources to assist with basic necessities, including finding housing, childcare, transportation, and dealing with stress. The Be There For Me campaign is part of a child safety and well-being plan created by the network and the department. The results have been released from a long-awaited investigation by the U.S. Army Reserves into its handling of Sergeant First Class Robert Card in the months before he carried out Maine's deadliest mass shooting last October in Lewiston. Though heavily redacted, the 115-page report describes multiple errors made by Card's unit leadership, medical professionals, and law enforcement as Card's mental health unraveled. For more on the report, Erwin Gratz spoke with Maine Public Statehouse Bureau Chief Steve Missler and John Terhune of the Portland Press-Herald, our partner in an ongoing collaboration with PBS Frontline.
John, let me start with you. One of the big unknowns in this report is why Robert Card was released from Four Winds, a private psychiatric hospital in New York, in August. Card had been having what were described as homicidal ideations and discussed having a hit list with his caregivers. What more can you tell us about that?
Hi, Erwin, and thanks for having me here today. As for Four Winds, I can't really tell you much except that it remains probably the single biggest mystery left within this case. We've been waiting for information about what happened at Four Winds, why he was discharged, even though it seems like he hadn't gotten any better during his brief stint there. We thought that this Army report might give us those answers, but the Army was really clear that they also don't understand what happened there, that this was a decision made by civilian medical providers, and that when the Army pressed them for answers, Four Winds said that they were not willing or maybe not legally able to talk to the Army. That may be because there was no permission given from the shooter's estate, and there was no court order, but we really haven't had an opportunity to entangle exactly what the legal obligations are here or even what the relationship is between the Army and Four Winds Hospital.
Robert Card was under a command directive to be evaluated and treated at Four Winds after first being transferred from a military hospital. So he was not involuntarily committed, but he was scheduled to appear in court on August 2nd, presumably to be evaluated for that purpose. That hearing was then canceled. Steve Missler, is there any indication why that happened?
Yeah, Erwin, so the Army report is a bit murky on this question, and I suspect part of that is because it was unable to get any cooperation whatsoever from Four Winds Hospital. But what we do know is that Card had asked to be released from Four Winds, and that under New York state law, he was given a hearing that would have determined basically whether he would be involuntarily committed. But that hearing was canceled for reasons that remain unknown, and he was released immediately after that. And as John mentioned, we don't know why, and neither does the Army. In fact, there's a line in the investigator's narrative that essentially says that it was unclear if Card's release from Four Winds was because of his command directive to seek treatment was set to expire, or if it was allowed to expire because he had been released by the hospital. And that's pretty stunning. Mm.
Included among the breakdowns around medical care and communication is the way Card was handled by the Army psychological program upon his release. People in this program were tasked with following up with Card, making sure he was taking his medications, going to appointments. John, why did this program raise some policy issues for the Army?
So the first thing to understand is that there were several different groups that were trying to engage in, or we're supposed to try to engage in, some follow-up of Card's case. You have two different hospitals involved, and then two different Army programs, plus Card's commanding officers who were supposed to be keeping an eye on the whole thing. Now, the most striking aspect of this that comes through in the report is the Army's psychological health program apparently had a policy that said if you try to follow up with a soldier and they are unresponsive, they're not picking up your phone, they're hanging up on you, then after some period of time, I think it's a month, you close the case. This seems to be a pretty jarring loophole when the goal is to be following up on soldiers who might be resistant to get care. The Army apparently agrees with this because they have since changed that policy. And even within the report, it says that while the Army Psychological Health Program staff technically followed standard operating procedures, they really should have known, based on following Card's history, that the case shouldn't have been closed and then it should have been reported to the chain of command. But even beyond the PHP and this one policy, you have all these different groups. They're not adequately communicating with one another. Some groups aren't doing anything at all. Some groups are filing the paperwork they're supposed to file, but they're doing it 2 weeks late. It was clearly just a mess there. And I think it is really sort of indicative of how this whole situation unfolded over the last year.
In fact, Erwin, there was a pretty striking detail that's related to what John was talking about how these case managers would reach out to Card. And in fact, I think the last time they tried to do that was on October 24th, the day before the shooting. And apparently Card picked up the phone, but hung up as soon as the other person started talking.
Well, we learned for the first time that several leaders of Card's command were disciplined. Steve, what does the report say about who was disciplined and why?
Yeah, so the Army would not identify the commanders who were disciplined except to say they were Card supervisors and had the rank of colonel or below. But they were sanctioned for what the Army described as, quote, dereliction of duty. And it appears that it's related to these communication failures that, again, John talked about at the beginning of this, between Card's commanders, the military hospital, and the civilian hospital, Four Winds. All of that affected Card's treatment and the follow-up that was supposed to occur by his commanders. Some of them have already acknowledged to the state commission that's investigating these shootings that they did not take steps to follow Card's treatment plan from Four Winds, make efforts to remove his guns from his home, or initiate a medical evaluation process that could lead to his discharge from the Army. As a result of this discipline, these commanders will no longer be eligible for promotion in the reserves, but we don't know who they are. I mean, we have a general idea who they are just because some of them have already testified, but they're not named in the actual report.
The Army also goes into a bit of detail about a possible explanation for Card's traumatic brain injury that could have contributed to his mental health issues. There was apparently a fall off a roof some years back. What do either of you make of that, John?
Well, you could sense the Army's reluctance not to speculate about the nature of the brain injury. I think this rings true for us as well in the media. The stakes here are really high in terms of what the source of the injury means for potentially thousands of other soldiers across the country. If this was the root cause was a fall from a ladder, kind of a freak accident, then maybe the Army doesn't need to change how every soldier goes through basic training. If the source was blast training, then potentially we need much bigger changes here. And so it was interesting that the report highlighted the fall off the ladder. And at a press conference yesterday, again, the Lieutenant General Daniels seemed to emphasize that part of the story. But I think they are leaving it for a forensic autopsy to, kind of push that question further down the road. Maybe we'll get some more clarity then.
Yeah, Erwin, I think this was a really curious element of the report. It's kind of buried in the report. There's a reference to this fall that happened in the summary of the report. The summary does not say when that fall happened, but it was in 2008. And apparently Card had fallen from a roof, broke his neck. And the report sort of floats the idea that this may have caused traumatic brain injury, but it doesn't go so far as to say, yes, this is it, as John noted. So, you know, and as John also noted, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, speculation that Card experienced this, you know, this brain injury because he was throwing grenades on a practice range when he was on drill. But the Army seemed to discount that as a reason in the report and during the press briefing yesterday, when in fact, General Jody Daniels said his exposure to other shock, meaning grenades, was, quote, relatively minor. So they seemed to dismiss this idea that his traumatic brain injury came from concussive blast or something else.
Steve Mistler is Maine Public's State House Bureau Chief. John Terhune, a reporter at the Portland Press Herald. Gentlemen, thank you both for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Herman.
My pleasure.
Maine's congressional delegation is calling on the Department of Defense to swiftly implement recommendations from the two Army investigations into the Lewiston mass shootings. They're also asking for regular briefings from Pentagon officials on any actions that are being taken. All four members of the delegation sent a letter on Tuesday to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, pressing for details and timelines for how the Pentagon plans to implement the recommendations. The report from the Army and the Army's Inspector General includes recommendations that the reserves update its behavioral health programs and policies. One report also calls for expanding the Army's suicide prevention program and determining whether a private psychiatric hospital in New York failed to adequately care for Robert Card months before he committed the mass shooting. The delegation also urged the Department of Defense to consider implementing some of the recommendations across all branches of the military. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, the backlog of people in Maine waiting for legal representation. I'm Patty White. Thanks for listening.